running down the right sideline for a touchdown is Victor Cruz. And he does the samba in the end zone.
Patrick back to throw. Lobs one left for Johnson.
Intercepted by Corey Webster.
Manning takes a low snap. He's back. Throws one left down the sideline for Nix,
who makes the catch for the touchdown. With 2:30 to go, Akeem Nix.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Michael Eisen.
Well, we got one of them at least. John Schmelk here, Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Happy Tuesday morning, everybody. The Giants are through their bye week. They're just 5 days away from playing the Miami Dolphins. The Giants, of course, sit at 4-2, first place in the NFC East. It is a good day to be a New York football Giant. A very interesting and surprising game last night. The Jacksonville Jaguars, with their rookie quarterback, Blaine Gabbert, beat the Baltimore Ravens 12-7. Not exactly an offensive clinic put on by either team, but a win is a win is a win. The Jaguar defense played extremely well. They hold Joe Flacco to only 21-38 for 137 yards and a touchdown. Ray Rice just 8 carries for 28 yards. Wow, I'm surprised the Ravens didn't try to run it more in that game. But an unbelievable job by the Jaguars defense. Blaine Gabbert only 9 of 20, 93 yards, but the big number, 0 interceptions, did not put his team and his defense in a tough spot that allowed the Ravens to get any easy points. Of course, they rode the very sturdy legs of Maurice Jones-Drew, 30 carries, 105 yards. He did fumble 3 times. One of those was lost, and Josh Scobie, really the superstar of the game, 4-4 on his field goals, including 3 from 50-plus yards out. So a very nice win and an upsetting win for the Jacksonville Jaguars, knocking off the Baltimore Ravens. But, of course, you can give us a call, anything New York Giants, anything in the NFL. Our number, 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513, or you can send in your questions on Twitter to hashtag GiantsChat. Now, obviously, Michael Eisen usually joins me on these Tuesday mornings. Today, he is out on assignment, so I am flying solo. I need your help on the phones, folks, so feel free to give us a call at 201-939-4513. Also, Sam Madison, former Giants cornerback and, of course, Super Bowl champion. He now covers the Dolphins down in Florida. He'll be joining us at 10 o'clock to talk about some Giant memories and, of course, to preview the game on Sunday against the Miami Dolphins. Let's go right to the phones. Loyal listener, my good friend Steve, is up in Connecticut. What's up, Steve?
What's going on, John? Missed you guys last week. Piggybacking off of what you were just saying about this Ravens-Jags thing, think we should be paying real close attention to that game, because I'm pretty sure everybody penciled in the Ravens to win that game handily. Also, Ramses Barden, if he comes back, who are we going to get rid of, you know, to make room for him? And Corey Webster, is he going to shadow Brandon Marshall the whole game? Because I know when they played the Jets, it was going at Revis a whole bunch, so I'm pretty sure, you know, I mean, Webster's not Revis, but he's pretty good, but I'm pretty sure they're going to target Brandon a lot that game.
All right, Steve, hang out for a little while here, and first of all, I'll go one by one. Let's start with the game last night. I was as surprised as you are, man. I thought the Ravens are going to pretty much have their way with the Jaguars. Obviously, you know, it could be a letdown type of game for Baltimore. The Jaguars were at home, which, of course, gives them some measure of an advantage. But, you know, it's a surprising win, and that's why they always say in the NFL, you know, any given Sunday, it happened to the Giants against the Seahawks a couple weeks ago. Giants, the more talented team, it happens. As for the two Giant points you brought up, first I'll hit the Corey Webster thing. If you take a listen last week when the Giants assistant coaches met the media, one big thing Perry Fuel spoke about was that this year they're using Corey Webster a lot more and putting him on the opposing team's best receiver. In years past, they would just leave him on one side of the field, whoever was there, that's who he would cover. But they're moving around this year, and he's really doing an excellent job on those other wide receivers. So, yes, I think you will see Corey Webster on Brandon Marshall a whole lot come Sunday. And what was your third point, Steve? I don't remember.
I think it was Ramses Barden.
Oh, that's right, Ramses. And you know what? And I think he might be back this week. They might not take him off the pup list quite yet. They probably want to give him some more practice time. So when he is physically ready to play, he's also mentally ready to play, and he's been in practice for a couple weeks. So I'm not sure I would expect him this week to be active, but I think you will see him active in the next 2 or 3 weeks. And, of course, the Giants have 3 weeks to decide whether or not they're going to make him active or leave him on IR for the rest of the year. In terms of who they're going to, you know, either, you know, put on IR or move off the roster to make room for him. I mean, the obvious guy would probably be Michael Clayton. He was the last wide receiver on, but the Giants do really like what he does on special teams. He's a good locker room guy. He's well-liked in there. But if I was to make a guess, and really, frankly, that's all it really is, Steve, is a guess, I would say it would probably be Michael Clayton.
Okay. Another thing.
Sure.
How do the Giants convince themselves that, you know, that, like, any given Sunday, like, this, you know, anything can happen? Because I'm pretty sure, like, everybody's going to be – the Giants are going to be favored heavily to win this game. How do they, like, block that out? Like, all right, let's just try to focus on this, you know, being a good team, you know, and look at the good things that they do have. Because it looks like their defense was not – their defense doesn't look that bad. I mean, their offense is pretty horrible.
Well, you know what, Steve? That's on head coach Tom Coughlin. And if you're worried about the Giants letting down and not taking the Dolphins serious, I'm going to say the same thing to you I said to a caller yesterday. Take a listen to Coach Coughlin's press conference on Wednesday at 11 o'clock. He's going to say, you have to ignore the Dolphins' record, folks. They're 0-6, but boy, they're playing some good football. Their defense is tough. They have playmakers on offense with Reggie Bush and Brandon Marshall. Coach Coughlin will be selling how good the Dolphins are to his team all week long. And you're right. Think about it. They do have some playmakers. Brandon Marshall is a legitimate number one wide receiver despite his issues with drops this year. Reggie Bush is a weapon out of the backfield. Daniel Thomas is third among rookies in terms of rushing yards and yards per carry. They have some weapons on offense that can make plays. Look, they haven't made a lot of plays yet this year. That's why they're 0-6. But they do have some talent.
And one more thing. Also, this coming Sunday night, the Eagles and the Cowboys play. I hate to say this, but I would like for the Cowboys to win and send the Eagles 2-5.
Yeah, see, now that's Steve. That's interesting. Which team do you think is a bigger long-term threat to the Giants, the Eagles or the Cowboys?
I definitely say the Eagles, man. Like, I think if they get any life, any momentum, we may have a little trouble.
All right, Steve, man. We appreciate the call, my friend.
All right,
thanks, Steve. And, you know, and I was talking about this with Giant fans over the weekend a lot. I was at a couple of weddings. A lot of Giant fans were there. And who is the most dangerous team in the NFC East? Everyone automatically dismisses the Redskins. They already had a quarterback change. They still have a pretty good defense. But, look, I think they probably have the least amount of talent of all the teams in the NFC East. And, yes, you can make the argument that the Eagles are the most talented. But here's the problem with the Eagles. They have some pretty serious fundamental flaws right now and things they don't do well. Their offensive line is a mess. They're going to get healthy. They did get healthy during the bye week. We'll see how they do against a very impressive Cowboys pass rush on Sunday night. Their linebackers aren't going to get any better. As good as their corners are, their safeties in the back end are okay football players. They're nothing special. And frankly, they're having trouble figuring out a way to use Nnamdi Asamoah to his full potential. He has not had a great year, and he has not played like a number one cornerback, and those are all issues the Eagles have. Now, I like what they did against the Redskins in the game before their bye. They really gave it to LeSean McCoy and let him control the game. If they do a little bit more of that and do a better job of protecting Vic, yes, they might be a true threat. But don't underestimate the Dallas Cowboys here. They nearly beat New England in New England last week, if not for a last-second drive, a couple weeks ago. The Cowboys have had troubles in the red zone all year long. Those are issues that can get fixed. And keep an eye on DeMarco Murray. If they can get a running game, that'll help their red zone offense, and that'll really solve one of the big problems they've had this year. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Darnell, down in North Carolina. What's up, Darnell?
Hey, how you doing?
What's up, bud?
Not much. I was calling in, man. I just wanted to know, I've been a Giants fan since I was a little boy, and I just wanted to know, you know, do they have what it takes to beat Miami? Now, I know Miami hasn't won a game, but in the past I've watched the Giants, you know, take some games where they should have just won, and they've made those games so hard, like the game against Seattle. That should have been an automatic win for us, but they lost. They made the game actually hard, and I just want to know, you know what I'm saying, Will they not get into that situation again this Sunday with Miami?
Well, Darnell, I'm not in the guarantees business here, but I can guarantee you this. The Giants have the talent to beat the Miami Dolphins. The Giants are the more talented team when they play the Miami Dolphins. And I'll tell you one other thing. If the Giants go out there and they play clean football, they don't make big mistakes, they don't turn the ball over, they don't give up big plays like they did against the Bills, they don't turn it over like they did against the Seahawks, they are going to win the game. Because if they go straight up with the Dolphins, the Giants are better.
Right, and I totally agree, because I get so much crap from guys that, you know, when I say I'm a Giants fan, I think Eli Manning is so underrated. I mean, a lot of guys forget that he's a Super Bowl MVP winning quarterback. I mean, in my eyes, he's great. You know, he's like another Phil Simms to me. You know, he came from a small college, led us to a Super Bowl, but I was just so frustrated. You know, we should have been 5-1 going into the bye week. And, you know, when I saw that one-handed catch by Cruz and then the guy runs it back, that made me so upset. You know, and I just don't – you know, I would hate to see that happen again against Miami. I mean, I've watched a couple of Miami games, and I've seen teams run all over them, and I know we have the power to do that. But, you know, it's just like I said in the past, I've seen the Giants just – you know, make easy games where, you know, you can see a game on the schedule and you say, okay, that's an automatic win. And then when the game actually comes, they have a hard time, you know.
Now, Darnell, I hear you, man.
I was talking to a buddy of mine, and, you know, we were talking about free agency. Like, I was so upset that we didn't get Plaxico back. And then I see he grabs 3 touchdowns the other day with, you know, with the Jets. And I'm actually taking that very personal. I don't know if you agree with me, but I think – that's a big slap in the face to us. You know, not to sign back with us, but you're going to go to our crosstown rival. I don't agree with that.
Yeah, but Darnell, keep this in mind. Before that 3-touchdown game, Burris has been a virtual non-factor this year. He's
done basically nothing.
I agree.
I totally agree. But it's just, you know, Coughlin, I love the guy. You know, he's you know, this is exactly what we needed. We won the Super Bowl with him, and sometimes you have to be strict. And I remember the year we won the Super Bowl, he was very strict, but we played well. You understand what I'm saying? And sometimes, you know, I noticed, like, after Plax caught that winning touchdown of Super Bowl, the next season we were 11-1. And this guy decides to get in trouble. He's showing up to practice late, you know, shoots himself. And when we lost, you know, I was so heartbroken. I couldn't even watch football for the rest of the year because I knew we're 11-1. We're automatic Super Bowl.
That was it.
And I've never forgiven that guy ever since he's done that, you know. And, you know, it just hurts me to my heart, you know.
Nah, Darnell, you're right. And frankly, that's, I think, is one of the reasons he probably didn't get brought back. I mean, after a guy does something like that, and let's call it like it is, he almost, and nothing's ever, it's a team game, it's never ever one guy, but he almost single-handedly submarined the potential Super Bowl season. You can make the argument, like you just said, the Giants were the best team in football that year. And frankly, it would have been hard to argue it. They were dominating teams on the ground. Their defense was out of control. And this guy ended up doing something dumb on a Friday night, and the whole season, frankly, swirled down the toilet.
Right. And it was totally heartbroken because I just couldn't believe that he would do that to us. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, hey, you got to do what you got to do. You know, I'm very big on discipline. And if you're not going to be on the same page as the rest of the team, then, hey, we don't need you. You know, one thing I did want to say, I don't know if you agree with me on this. I actually thought, you know, a lot of people were saying he would never go back to the Giants, and I was the only one that believed that. But when he finally, like, came to the building, I watched the whole episode when he got out of jail, and when he came to the building, they said that everybody greeted him, and they showed him pictures of himself on the wall. And, you know, the Eli Manning thing, like, I love Eli to death, but, and maybe I'm wrong, but the way a lot of people were saying that Eli was saying, well, hey, our offense will be back where it is if he comes back. But then when Plaxico hit the building, he saw everybody except Eli. I understand Eli was in meetings, but I kind of put myself in that position. You know, hey, if I'm locked up and the quarterback's going out saying, hey, our offense will be this way if I come back, then when I come back to the building and I see everybody but the quarterback that's taking up for me, I may take that a certain type of way too.
All right, Darnell, man, thanks for the call. We appreciate it.
All right.
Take it easy, man. And look, I honestly wasn't there. You don't know what type of, you know, texts or calls happened between the two guys. I wouldn't take that seriously. And quite frankly, and a lot of times this is the way the world works, it boils down to dollars and cents. The Jets offered Plaxico Burress guaranteed money that, frankly, no other team in the NFL was going to offer him. And when you're not collecting checks for a couple years because you're in jail, guess what? you're probably going to end up taking the team that offers you the most guaranteed money, and I don't blame them. I would do the same exact thing. So that to me is really what the bottom line is. 201-939-4513. Joe down in Florida. What's going on, Joe?
Hey, what's up, guys?
What's up, bud?
Hey, I was just wondering, is Justin Tuck – I have two questions, actually.
Yep.
Is Justin Tuck going to be playing on Sunday?
Well, Justin Tuck was very coy with the media yesterday. We caught up with him in the locker room after practice, but there was a different mood around him. He was laughing. He was joking around. He did practice yesterday. So I can't tell you for sure, but I would definitely put – if I was to put a percentage on it right now, I'd say 75-25 he plays.
All right, and my other question is, last night when I was watching the game, the Ravens game, I saw them moving around Michael Orr from left tackle to right tackle, and I was wondering if Justin Tuck does play, do you think they're going to move around Jake Long from Osemen Horror to Justin Tuck?
No, I think they'll leave Jake Long at left tackle. He has left tackle feet. That's the position he's played since he's come into the league. He has not missed a game since he came into the league as a starting left tackle, which he played as a rookie. When you're that high of a draft pick, you want your best guy on the left side against OC. So that's where he's going to go. Now, Jake Long has had a bit of a slow start this year. He didn't play in any of the preseason games. He's a little banged up. He's already allowed 4.5 sacks this season. For a left tackle, especially when that's supposed to be a top left tackle in the league, that's a lot of sacks through only 6 games. So OC could have an opportunity here to do some damage. Same with Jason Pierre-Paul and Justin Tuck, whoever ends up lining up over Long.
All right, that was all I was wondering. Thanks.
All right, Joe, appreciate the call, man. 201-939-4513. Back to the phones. Let's say hello to Vinny in Pennsylvania. Ah, a good buddy, Vin. What's up, pal?
What's up, John? How you feeling today?
I'm doing great, Vin. How about yourself?
Good. I love when you're on because when Meadows is on, I don't call in.
Oh, Vinny, Lance is the man. Don't badmouth my boy Lance. What's up, Vin?
No, I'm just bugging. But seriously, you always try to talk negative, so. No, I got a couple things. One, I want to start it off with, like, I think we're going to be all right against the Dolphins because the guys are coming back off a lot of injuries. You know, anybody who plays sports on the weekends knows when Sunday comes, everybody wants to play, even if you're on a softball team, you know. So, especially being back after a bye, got all the a lot of, you know, Tuck back, a couple of these other guys, I think we'll be all right.
Hey, look.
I heard someone talk. Yeah, right?
Yeah, I mean, they should be, and especially since you're getting all these guys back. Chris Neap practiced yesterday. Justin Tuck practiced yesterday. Henry Hinoski practiced yesterday. Brandon Jacobs practiced yesterday. Ramsey's Barn even got in the practice field yesterday, for goodness sakes. The only guy you didn't see out there was Adam Coates. So you're right. The Giants should be closer to 100% heading into the game on Sunday, Vin.
Right, right. And just real quick, I just want to say, like, Flax, I don't care about his 3 touchdowns. We got Knicks. I'll tell you what, if it was me personally picking between those guys, would I take a guy who shot himself in the leg on the way to a Super Bowl trip, or a guy who's young like Knicks who seems really, like, in the zone, calm, respects what the history of the Giants is? Anyway, you know, I don't even want to hear about Plax anymore. I didn't even want to hear about him at the beginning of the season. He's done. He shot himself in the leg. I mean, where's his head at, John?
No, Vinny, you're right. I mean, frankly, I'll make the argument that right now I take Knicks, Manningham, and frankly, maybe even Victor Cruz over Burris at this moment. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I don't know how much Plaxico Burris has left. What has he shown this year besides his 1-3 touchdown game? He hasn't shown a whole lot.
And against two, you know?
Not exactly. And think of it this way. The guy's 34. He's 2 years without playing. A regular 34-year-old wide receiver, how much does that guy have left? Let alone a guy that's been out of the league for 2 years.
Anyway, look, I'm gonna say two more things on the out.
Sure, Vin.
I'm gonna take up some time, but one, I'm happy that I just bought my vintage sock hat and my vintage scarf. I can't wait to wear it.
Nice.
And I got my girl a pair of socks, so you know, I have to throw that in there.
All right.
I'm hype on that.
All right, baby.
And I'm gonna go out like this. OC, okay? I love him. I know he's gonna be expensive, but seriously, I don't know what he has left. What you guys know, but man, is he worth the money? Because I love watching him, and I know he's a holdout and all that stuff, but he seems to be in the zone when he's ready, when he's with the team. So, you know, I can understand he wants money. You know, these guys get hurt. What do you think? Are we going to give him the money?
OC's a premier pass rusher, and there are very few guys in this league, Vin, that rush the passer like OC. The guy had 11 forced fumbles last year, which is just a mind-blowing statistic that I can't even verbalize. How impressive is it a guy to sack the quarterback and force 11 fumbles the way OC did? Now, here's the issue, though. He's had chronic knee issues. We all know about the hip. He's getting up in age. Osi's been around for a while. Now you got to decide and wonder whether or not you want to invest big, long-term money into a guy like that. I'm sure the Giants will look at all the medical reports. They'll see how his season ends, and if they decide that, heck, we think this guy can be productive for another, you know, 4 or 5 years, then, yeah, they will give Osi some more money. But remember this. They've built a lot of depth behind him with their drafts. You can move Mathias Kiwanuka back to defensive end. You can play Jason Pierre-Paul at that defensive end, who, by the way, still leads the NFL in sacks. So it's not like they don't have a lot of guys there in case Osi decides to try to find greener pastures elsewhere. But remember, he does have 1 year left on his contract, Osi, so I would expect him to be a member of Big Blue next season, no doubt about it. 201-939-4513. Also on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. Let's go to Nick down in Washington, D.C. Nick, what's up, pal?
Hey, how you doing, man? Just want to say I'm a big fan of your show. I listen to you guys all the time at work.
Hey, appreciate that, Nick. What's on your mind this morning?
I just want to talk about the NFCs. You know, it's funny to me. I was watching ESPN a couple of days ago. I was watching that Mike and Mike in the morning.
Uh-huh.
And they asked them, they said, who is the best team in the NFCs? And both of them, and both knuckleheads, decided to say, the Dallas Cowboys are the best team in the NFCs, which is fine, I understand. But their reasoning was just completely mind-boggling. They said they are the best team in the NFCs because, A, they're the most consistent, and, B, they have the most consistent quarterback. And I was thinking to myself, are we on the same page here, most consistent quarterback? I mean, I don't know what the definition of consistent is according to ESPN.
Now, look, hey, look, I'll be honest with you. I know a lot of people are really down on Tony Romo. I think he's a much better quarterback than other people give him credit for. If you look at his overall numbers, they're good. But you're right. He has moments, and sometimes, like we've seen this year, at the end of the games, where he has a lot of issues. And where does Eli Manning play his best football usually? Towards the end of games, trying to make comebacks, two-minute drill, that sort of thing. And Eli Manning is a more consistent quarterback, in my opinion, than Tony Romo. Romo might do some more ridiculous, spectacular things at time, avoiding the rush, rolling out, making a crazy throw. But Eli, to me, is much more consistent. And if you look at his season this year, it's hard to really argue it. He has a quarterback rating over 100. He's only thrown 5 interceptions. Eli's having a phenomenal year. And talent-wise, I think probably the two teams are very similar in terms of overall talent, the Giants and the Cowboys. But it's all a matter of which team is going to make the plays when they have to make them. And quite frankly, who makes the fewest mistakes? And this year, so far at least, the Giants have made the fewest mistakes, Nick, and that's one of the reasons they're in first place in the NFC East. And since they are in first place, I don't see how you can argue that right now. They're not the best team in the NFC East.
I completely agree with you. My other comment was this. A lot of people are talking about this tough schedule that we got.
Oh, it's tough.
But I think that we got to look at the teams that we're playing. I mean, you look at New England. Yeah, they're at home. Yeah, it's New England.
Yeah, they're good.
When you look down the road, you're thinking to yourself, okay, Green Bay might be undefeated when they come to the Meadowlands.
They could be.
I'm sure those fans are thinking, uh-oh, that's one game that might be losing. It might be that game. I don't want to jump the gun. We got to take it 1 week at a time. I've never been this excited to see a New York Giant team coming out of a bye week, and I've been a fan for a long time.
Nick, that's great, man.
I'm so excited to see this team. I'm so excited to see Barden. I'm so excited. Might not see him this week, but that rookie cornerback, I can't wait. I'm chewing on my fingertips waiting for this team.
All right, Nick, man, we appreciate the call, man. Thanks a lot.
Uh-huh, thank you.
And, you know, Prince, we'll see if he goes this week, and if he goes this week, exactly how much he'll do. I wouldn't expect him in that big of a role quite yet. One more call before we bring up Sam Madison, former Giants cornerback and, of course, Super Bowl champion, and he covers the Dolphins down there in Miami as well. We'll talk about the game this Sunday and go around the league a little bit as well. Let's go down to Josh in Texas, and he wants to talk about the Prince. Josh. Oh, and it looks like Josh said goodbye to us there. So there we go. 201-939-4513. We're going to try to get up Sam Madison here. He covers the Dolphins down in Miami. And he also, of course, is a former New York Giant, a member of that 2007 Super Bowl team, something none of us will ever forget. And he was a big part of the leadership of that team along with R.W. McQuarters in the secondary. And just a great guy, and we'll be happy to have him on the show in just a couple of minutes. Of course, I want to have a couple reminders for you Giant fans out there. Make sure you follow the Giants on Twitter, at Giants. On Facebook, it's facebook.com/New York Giants. Make sure you check them out, the Giants, on Facebook as well. And finally, if you're on your phone, you're on the move, maybe you're not around a computer, go to the Giants mobile app. You can get it on your mobile phone marketplace, whether it's iTunes, the Android marketplace, BlackBerry, App World, you name it, go there, download it. We got all our articles, all our videos, you name it, all our Giants.com stuff is there. So make sure you download the New York Giants mobile app. And now we're going to bring in a very special guest, former Giants cornerback and Super Bowl champion, Sam Madison. He covers the Dolphins down in Miami. Sam, John Schmelk up here at the Timex Performance Center in East Rutherford, New Jersey. It's good to talk to you, bro. How are you?
Hey, man, I'm doing great, man. I'm in a sticky situation down here in Fort Lauderdale right now, though.
Why?
Hey, man, somebody keep asking me on my Twitter, hey, who am I pulling for, the Giants or the Dolphins? So I'm like...
What do you answer?
Like, so you're really going to bring that up. So I just left it like that. But, man, you know I definitely have love for the Giants, and I definitely have love for the fans. So I just want to see a very good game this weekend.
All right, give me a little scouting report on the Dolphins here. Obviously, they've started the season rough there. 0-6, their offense has struggled. Chad Henne's out for the year. What have you seen from Miami so far this season?
Well, the youthness of this football team has taken shape. You really have to go back and you have to look at towards the end of last year, just the breakdown of not being able to finish football games at the end of last year. Then it just trickled over into this football game. And, you know, all coming into the beginning of the season, it really was, you know, what Chad Henne was going to do. And pretty much, you know, the fan base and everybody was speaking and asking, why didn't you go out and get a quarterback? But Chad came in under Brian Daboll's system, who came over from Cleveland Browns, and he flourished very well. But unfortunately, out in San Diego, I think in like the first quarter, he went down with a shoulder injury. And, you know, Matt Moore, coming from Carolina Panthers the last few years, he was able to step in. But, you know, just shuffling of the offensive line and just the chemistry and timing, I think, of the offseason really, really hurt this Miami Dolphins football team with a brand-new offensive coordinator coming in. And defense has just been on the football field entirely too long. They're doubling our defense in. The same thing you guys get a lot.
Yeah.
But it just haven't been clicking for the Dolphins so far.
Well, let's talk about the quarterback, Matt Moore. He's a guy that Tony Sperano had down in Dallas when he was their offensive coordinator down there. He started a little bit for Carolina last year, like you mentioned. What have you seen from him? How comfortable is he in that system right now? And is he a guy that the Dolphins can lean on to win a game, or is he a guy just out there kind of managing things and trying not to screw up, for lack of a better term?
Well, pretty much not screw up things, man. But this is the good thing for Brian Daboll versus Chad Henne. Matt Moore can get outside the pocket. He can do different things with his legs, and it allows for this football team to utilize their skill set, which is Brandon Marshall, who, you know, who's had some drops, but he come up with dynamic plays. And when you're outside of the pocket, that's what happens, you know, when you have quarterbacks that can get outside. Now you throw jump balls to very athletic, tall, wide receivers, and then they make plays like that rather as conventional route running. So that's been one of the struggles so far, but really has been injuries because Daniel Thomas missed the first couple of games, but he's been coming back, and he's been a monster for the Miami Dolphins. They selected him, they moved up and selected him in the second round, and he's been great for him. You know, Reggie Bush, you know, still wanted to be that leading rusher to run between the tackles, but, you know, it just haven't happened. But Daniel Thomas is going to loosen things up, and hopefully they can get Reggie Bush out in space. But Matt Moore can manage things, but the guys around him have to make plays.
Yeah, you mentioned one of the big playmakers they brought in this past offseason was Reggie Bush, and they're using him a lot more as a running back as compared to what the Saints used him, when the Saints really used him as a wide receiver. He's been in the backfield a lot more for Miami.
Yeah, but, you know, you still have to realize, you know, the lockout situation, it didn't – once they – bought Reggie Bush and he still couldn't practice for a couple of days.
Right.
So this whole system was entirely new to everybody. So majority of players, they're in a system for a number of years and they learn certain ways, and you can't just throw the whole entire playbook at these guys because, like I said, you had Colombo who came in from Dallas to take over at right tackle, and then you moved Vernon Carey down to right guard. Unfamiliar position for Vernon Carey, and then you have the rookie Mike Pouncey right there in the middle, but Jake Long, he couldn't practice the first couple of weeks. So this whole thing, you know, for his practice, just watching plays, it was always a setback because the defense would make a big sack, so you had to start all over and walk over through a play just for the guys to understand and get the system. But Daniel Thomas has come on, and it allowed Brian Daboll to loosen up a little bit because of his running style. He's always leaning forward. He's never getting knocked back.
Do you think Daniel Thomas is the real deal?
Yeah, you know, when I first when we first drafted him, I called one of my friends that went to Kansas State, and they said, you know, Sam, he reminds me of a running back by the name of Eddie George.
Oh, wow.
And so far, it definitely has been a resemblance of him because of the high knees, the way that he runs. He runs very physical every single play, and I'm telling you, when he's been in there, with the limited time he's been in there because of that hamstring, I haven't seen him been knocked back so far. And having a very athletic young center like Mike Pouncey, it allows him to get outside and run those quick screens. But Charles Clay is going to be the guy that I think that really opened these things up. And you're going to see a catch that this guy made. He just had one catch for 29 yards. It was supposed to be a flat route. He turned it up, and the quarterback threw it behind him. He caught it with one hand.
I saw that. Unbelievable catch.
Yeah, just his athletic ability. He's able to line up outside. But they still have to get on the same play. You know how young guys are with injuries and becoming a starter in the beginning of the career instead of learning.
You mentioned Brandon Marshall, and he has had, I think he leads the NFL in drops with 7. What's been the issue? Is it a matter of adjusting to different quarterbacks with the injury? What's been his issues in terms of concentrating and consistently catching the football?
Well, that's always been his MO, even when he was in Denver. So, I mean, there's nothing new, and the Miami Dolphins knew that when they selected him. But, you know, it's been the easy ones that's really been plaguing Brandon Marshall. I mean, if you go back and you look in the first game of the season, he had one in the back of the end zone. It should be a routine catch. If it's a Monty Toomer, I don't think the Miami Dolphins is sitting here right now 0-6 because of those catches that he's made in his career. But, you know, you have to make those catches as a routine wide receiver and put yourself in a great situation. And just with the Jets, I think last week, not able to be able to get off the press of Darrell Revis, and he returns it back for 100 yards. And just one every now and then here and there throughout the course of these 6 games, not only with Brandon Marshall, but, you know, collectively as an offensive unit. I mean, it's been balls in several guys' hands to move the chains, but it's just glaring because Brandon Marshall is the alpha wide receiver, and he's the one that's really, you know, leading the pack. But everybody's doing it consistently throughout the course of these 6 games, but it's just one or two are here, one and two there. And, you know, something that coaches always talk about, 1-2 here and 3 – and it tends to add up, then you have 15 or 20 mental and missed assignments.
Yeah, and a lot of those drops have been for touchdowns, like you mentioned, Sam. And I think I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask you anyway, even though you're a former cornerback. Was that pass interference on Darrell Revis on that play against Brandon Marshall?
Well, you know, they let them play, you know, because, you know, when you're out there and you're looking at a wide receiver and defensive back, you know, disparity between sizes, you know, they're going to eventually give that smaller guy the right of way because majority of the time the bigger guys just try to run you over and force your way through it. So Revis was in pretty good shape. But, you know, when you're a bigger guy, you know, sometimes as you see Tony Gonzalez, he's going to run in there, act like he's going to put it in there, just turn around and catch the ball. You just have to be finesse. And, you know, Darrell Revis uses his feet and his hands very well. And, you know, you're entitled to, you know, that distance in between you and the wide receiver. So, you know, they didn't call it, so you can't cry about it.
All right, Sam, I want you to put on your pads for a second, put on your gloves, put on your cornerback gear. How do you cover a big athletic guy like Brandon Marshall, especially in and around the red zone?
Well, in and around the red zone, I mean, pretty much at, when you're covering any wide receiver, you have to be consistent with your feet and your hands. And as bigger wide receivers, you know, having opportunities to play against guys like Ed McCaffrey, who was taller, you know, very versatile, and Randy Moss and you know, guys of that nature, it allows you to see different types of moves. So and even with Plexico, because of his height and his jumping ability, so you have to stay within those guys. You're not going to be able to outjump them because of their wingspan, so you have to play in between their hands. And if you can stay close to them and not give way to one side or the other and stay in position, you just have to play through their hands because of their height, because the ball is going to be placed in a position to where only he can catch it because of, you know, the height differential. But, you know, if you're a taller corner, you have a better shot than the shorter ones.
Now, one of the guys that's still around from your times with the Giants is Corey Webster. We expect the Giants to move Webster around a lot on Sunday, and he'll find himself on Brandon Marshall for much of that game. How do you break down that matchup? You're very familiar with both guys.
Oh, yeah, very familiar with both guys. It's going to be a great fight. And, you know, myself and Corey and Aaron Ross and Terrell, we continue to stay tight and, you know, always talk to them. And just like the other guys that I work with in St. Louis and here with the Dolphins, I continually talk to these guys and just, you know, because we are our own little fraternity. We're defensive backs, and we're always at a disadvantage. But this game, for me, it doesn't come around very often. And, you know, I just – remember playing since 1997, and this is like the second time since then. I came up one time, and this is the second time. But it's just, this fight is going to, it's just going to be one-on-one matchup, because Brandon wants to continue to prove himself, and Corey, you know, when he gets himself going and get lather and coming up with those two big plays, and gets his confidence and gets his swagger and his bounce. So Brandon is in a situation to where he needs to get out of a funk, and, you know, they're sitting here at 0-6. It could be a breakout game, but, you know, Corey, I think, will shadow him majority of the game, and Aaron and the rest of the guys are just floating around. And that defensive line, I mean, I'm pretty sure they're watching, but they're going to have to really worry about this run, first of all. And if they can't contain that, then it'll open up one-on-one situation outside.
Obviously, you never wanted to happen because of an injury. Terrell Thomas obviously out for the year at the ACL, but were you happy to see Aaron Ross get the opportunity to get back into that starting lineup and really be 100% healthy for the first time? And he's playing pretty well this year.
Yeah, man, you guys could have been really, really dangerous, even if Prince could have been healthy and you could have had him as well. So, you know, injuries hurt you guys, but, you know, just the depth and just the athletic ability of your secondary, you know, has continued to help you guys. And having the entrails as well as Kenny Phillips, those guys that can float around. But Aaron Ross is that swing guy. You know, you always, as an offensive line, you're like, hey, you got to be able to swing here or do this and play everything. That is what Aaron Ross is, because of, you know, his size and the way that he just plays bigger than he really is. But you know, just having to move from nickel to safety to corner is very difficult in the NFL. You know, half the time, corners just playing one side can't master that. But, you know, he's been having to fill roles since, you know, coming into the NFL. But just to see him be able to bounce back and continue to make plays, it just shows his resilience that, you know, he wants to be considered a top corner. But being that you guys have so much depth at that position is hard because of the little nagging injuries that he's had over the course of the years. But I think he's finally got it together, and having, you know, enter a role and bringing in Grant and all those guys, now you don't really have to take that pounding, and he can really solidify that nickel position because of his long athletic ability. And I just remember this guy, you know, coming down with a couple of interceptions his rookie year. I was like, wow, how did he make that play? And if he can get back to how his body was and feeling himself being at, you know, hey, man, I just won a championship and all of that, I think, you know, you guys' secondary is going to be, can take you very far, you know, this season.
And, of course, it helps when you got a bunch of pass rushers up there. You got Justin Tuck coming back from injury. And then you got Jason Pierre-Paul leading the league in sacks with OC. And you got other guys running around. I mean, the Giants lead the league in sacks, Sam. And as a corner, you know how much easier it makes your job when those big guys are front and knocking around the quarterback.
And people always say, man, why do they keep getting these defensive ends? This bad? I mean, but it's never a bad thing to have depth on the defense, because you know you never know when you're going to have long drives, and you got to have guys to be able to rotate in that has a chip on their shoulder and still want to prove a point. And you just look at Mathias Kiwanuka, he's been in that situation, you know, since coming in 96, you know, having OC Justin and having Michael Strahan. So he had to sit there knowing that he can play, but he's learning and getting all his knowledge from all these guys that been playing for a while and all of them the same age, so they're fighting at the same time. But it's great competitive, but the nature of the business, injuries are going to happen. But even when you had those injuries, we were able to still plug guys into situation to continue to play, and this is what happened so far. You know, Justin goes out with a neck injury for a couple of weeks, but they don't miss a beat, and you know, everybody just continue to feel. But when you get in passing downs, that is where you really get in a long passing downs. It really gets you in a bad situation, because you're putting Justin Tuck, who is a phenomenal pass rusher, over a guard, a center, just as well as Mathias Kiwanuka. These guys are much faster than those shorter guys, and outside you can't double team all of them. So you can get pressure right up the middle, and you can get pressure outside. And pressure on the quarterback equals interception for the defensive back. So it all works hands in hand. And you saw what happened last week, getting the ball out, no timing route, you come up with interception.
And, Sam, I want to ask about Eli Manning. He's really having one of the best starts to his career. Quarterback rating over 100, twice as many touchdown passes, interceptions, almost a 64% completion percentage. What type of growth and improvements have you seen from Eli since your time here with the Giants? And do you consider him an upper echelon, you know, top five quarterback in this league?
Oh, most definitely. I've been able to sit there and, you know, doing special teams. You know, majority of his receiver was always on special teams. So you have to look at the things around him. You know, you have Amani Toomer and those guys there at the beginning of his career that he can depend on. But then you go into, you know, all of a sudden Plexico leaves, and now you're getting Dominique Hickson, who's going in and out with injuries. You know, you don't have that tall, lanky receiver. Then you go out and get Nix. He resembles Flex, and he's having a great time. And then he goes down. Then you go back to smaller, shorter receivers, and then he's misfiring because he's been used to tall receivers. So Eli has been having to have to adjust as well since after winning the Super Bowl because of the different receivers he's had to go through. No one guy has been there consistently for him, but he's still been able to get it done. And that's what that defense has allowed for him, because they're turning the ball over and giving it back to him. But he's had a great career, and I love him. And he is one of those top quarterbacks I definitely will put in a situation like, hey, you can't forget about this guy's body of work, because, you know, a lot of these quarterbacks have receivers that been there year in and year out for him. Once we won the Super Bowl, it's been up and down in the receiver category for him, and he's still been able to get it done. But, you know, just continuing to go out and get great players to put around him. And what happens is those players that they bring in, they're like, man, this guy can put the ball on the money, and it allows them to go out and make those plays for him as well as he takes those chances because of his arm strength.
All right, Sam, I want to reminisce a little bit with you here. And one game back in that magical 2007 season that was really a kind of a weird experience, I think, for all of us who made the trip and had to go out there. But when you had to play your former team, the Miami Dolphins, out there in London, what was that like for you looking back playing, you know, the team that really you wore the jersey of for most of your career?
Well, you know, I mean, I always, and you know, have you know, aqua and orange in my blood, and
right.
And but just having the opportunity, you know, for the organization of the New York Giants to give me another opportunity, you know, after being released to play for them, you know, a team that I always respect, you know, since playing video games. You know, everybody would pick all the great, you know, these teams. I'm like, man, give me the New York Giants. I play with them.
Nice.
And it always stuck with me. So soon as, you know, they asked me to come, I was like, man, sure, because they had a quarterback. And I didn't have to worry about having to shuffle. I knew if we get the ball back to that offense, it'll be great. And when we all of a sudden had a chance to play the Miami Dolphins, I'm like, oh, man, we're going back to Miami. They were like, we're going to London. I was like, thank you. So it was great. But because it would have been that much more pressure because of all the different fans and everything, so I didn't really have to deal with that. But in South Florida, there are so many Giant fans. It's been crazy. I met all these people before, and then somebody be like, hey, I'm a Giants fan. I'm like, there's a million Giants fans down here. But when we went over to London, I really had, embraced the New York Giants at that time, and our main focus was, you know, we had started this win streak on the road, and we needed to continue to do that, and that was my main focus. And majority of the guys that was over there, it was only probably about three or four or five and one or two or three coaches, so it wasn't as stressful for me because they knew it was business related, and it had already been 10 years so that I played with that organization, so it wasn't that much animosity. It was, everything was love, but I really was focusing on winning this football game for the New York Giants because, you know, I had built this bond with these guys that they was believing in me, meaning my secondary guys. So I didn't want that to distract them. So I wanted to stay focused and just, you know, spend time with those guys and not really involve myself in anything else. And that's where we did the Sam Cam over there.
Yep.
And all the guys were walking the streets. And, man, we had a great time spending time together.
Obviously, you had the Super Bowl. That's the easy answer, Sam. But is there a more, maybe an under-the-radar moment from that Super Bowl season that you'll always remember that maybe, you know, fans or other people might not automatically think about when you look back to that very special season when you won the Super Bowl?
You have to go back and you have to look at that win against the Washington Redskins. You know, we all had already started off 0-2, and you have to realize what happened. You know, Michael Strahan had said that he would retire and he wasn't going to play. And, you know, he missed all of training camp. And we had just got a new defense coordinator in Steve Spagnuolo. So he didn't know this system. And so we was playing with all the guys and everybody was like, Mike, come on back. But we still, in the midst of trying to get him to come back, we had to learn a totally new system with all these guys. But the good thing about it, we had veteran guys that can play and learn on the fly rather than having young guys in positions that couldn't do that. When you're throwing a playbook at a young guy, you're like, man, what is this? I got this cat and that cat defense. Man, I have him, you got him. But it doesn't work like that. In NFL, you have to be able to adjust. And we had the guys to do that. And we had everything on offense in place, the offensive line. We had the running backs. We went through like three or four running backs, quality running backs, that was able to continue to move because injuries are going to happen. And that goal line stance in the Washington Redskins game was a signature moment for, I think, our football team because we set an identity that we could go on the road in tough situations and jail together and believe in one another. And what that one play did defensively for us, because, like I said, this defense was new to everybody. And everybody, Kavika Mitchell was coming from a different scheme. He played middle linebacker, and he had to move the wheel. Everybody was seeing different things, but Coach Spags kept beating and pounding, like, hey, you have to run through and make this play. And that is what Kavika Mitchell did on that play, and it allowed AP and everybody else to come and flow. And that goal line stance really helped the New York Giants succeed in that 2007 championship run.
And if I remember right, Aaron Ross made a very big play on that goal line stance as well, taking out the legs out from that Redskins running back. One more thing, Sam. You know, UNRW that year, all I remember is you guys were coaches on the field, coaching up the young guys like Corey, like Aaron Ross, and I know you've done some coaching internships. Is that something that you really want to get into and become a coach in the NFL?
Well, it just depends. I mean, at this point, no, I'm doing, you know, what I really like. I have, you know, Kellen, who is 8, and Kennedy, who is 6, and then we just had a 1-year-old, Caden.
Oh, congratulations.
And, thank you, man. And, you know, just spending time and trying to get them up and into all their little stuff, man, I enjoy taking them to school and picking them up and handling, you know, my fatherly duties and running everything that I do. So at this point, no, but it allows me, because I train these guys, you know, on the off season. So it still gives me an opportunity to work with the guys one-on-one and not wear one hat.
Right.
And wear an individual hat to be able to work on that specific person and not worry about, you know, man, we got to we can't go over here and do this. We can't go over that. Man, I want to work with all defensive backs. I want to work with all kids and be able to teach them, you know, just basic technique. So, you know, just to hone up their skills, because I want to succeed them. I just started playing fantasy football last year,
nice.
My first year. And I was like, man, that was the best thing could have happened to me, because I'm able to watch all the different players around the league and understand their skill set and know how they can change the dynamics of a football game. So, I mean, I'm keeping it open. If my kids get a little bit older, I'm always going to continue to try to learn and keep myself knowledgeable about the game by working with the different coaches and the different youth and the different professional kids. So when that time comes, I'll be well prepared and I know what I can deliver.
Great stuff, Sam. Are you going to be up here on Sunday for the game?
No, man, I'm sorry, man. I'll be down here with the Finnsiders, and we'll be, you know, watching the game, you know, from a bird's-eye view and critiquing everything. But, no, I'll be down here. We'll be working. I do radio and television for the Miami Dolphins.
Yep.
You know, 9:40 a.m. and the Finnsiders.com, you know, Monday through Friday from 5 to 7. So it's just been great for me to come back home and do something and continue to be around the team, but yet and still continue to be focused around the NFL and all the different things. So, you know, great starting on my Twitter. You can follow me at SamMatty29.
Nice.
And, you know, and I'm always on there talking. So just being productive down here and enjoying the run that we had and all the things that I've done in the NFL. But, you know, people keep it asking. I'm like, no, I'm not coming back. It's over for me, baby.
Sam, great stuff. Everyone up here in New York misses you. We love you. You did a great job when you're up here. And hopefully we'll talk to you again real soon, okay?
All right, thank you. And we want to see a great game. That's what we want to see.
Sam, we're with you, baby. Thanks a lot for the time, man. Be good.
All right, thank you. Talk to you later.
Former Giants quarterback Sam Madison right here on Giants.com. Very great Giant. He's a good guy. Great to have him on the air. He was a great guy to have here with the New York Giants, and really gave us some good stuff there for about 20 minutes here on the phones on Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Let's go to the phones. We have one guy who kind of held on for much of that Sam Madison interview. We appreciate it, so let's get right to him. That's Sean in New Jersey. Sean, what's going on, pal?
Hi, how you doing?
What's up, Sean?
I got a question for you about the Giants wide receivers.
Uh-huh. What do you got?
Plaxico Burress.
Uh-huh.
I was a huge Plaxico fan. I've been a Giants fan my whole life.
Okay.
And I think he played one of the biggest roles in that Super Bowl run that they had.
Sure he did. He had one of the best games a wide receiver's ever had in the playoffs against the Packers. He was absolutely unstoppable that game. He took Al Harris to school. No question.
Now, do you think they should have tried harder to get him back?
I don't, and this is why. I don't think he's better than what they have on their team right now. I don't think he's better than Akeem Nicks. I don't think he's, frankly, better than Mario Manningham at this point. I'm not sure how much Plaxico Burress has left. I realize he had 3 touchdown catches last week, Sean, but until that game, he was really a non-factor for the Jets all year long. Let's be honest.
You are right. You are right. Now, I'm just a little nervous. The Giants always have to have this thing that bites them in the back every time. They do so good with their receivers, and then someone gets hurt, and it messes up their whole rotation. Do you think they should have tried keeping him as a backup receiver?
Well, you know, luckily they've developed a little bit more depth this year. Victor Cruz has come on. He's been a young guy. He's getting better. And now he's a very solid third guy. Maybe Ramsey's Barton coming off the pup list can be a factor as that fourth wide receiver. And then, of course, you have Devin Thomas kind of floating around there too. Honestly, Sean, I'm being completely honest with you here. I'm not just toting the party line. I don't think Burris would have helped this team that much this year, and I think the Giants have more than enough depth and talent at wide receiver with the guys they have on their roster right now.
Okay, okay. And I just have one other question.
Yeah, what do you got?
Brandon Jacobs.
Yes.
Do you think he should – do you think the Giants should keep him, or do you think Bradshaw is good enough for a starter, or do you think he should remain as the backup for the third down running?
I think that in the NFL these days, Sean, no matter what team you're on, unless you have that freak guy like Adrian Peterson, you need two running backs in this league. You can't survive on one. You're going to run the guy into the ground, and in 5 years he's going to be done. I think you need two guys that can share the load. Bradshaw is going to be 1A, and I'm not even going to call Jacobs 2. I'm going to call Jacobs 1B. Because I think Bradshaw will get 15, 16 carries, Jacobs will get 12 or 13, and I think you really need both guys for the Giants' running game to be effective.
Okay, all right.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it, man. Great call, 201-939-4513. One more call before we wrap this sucker up. Mike's in Pennsylvania. What's up, Mike?
Hey, what's up, guys?
What up, bud?
I don't really want to relive the 07 season. I talk to a lot of Giants fans.
It was a great season, though, Mike. It was a great season, though, Mike. Not a bad season to relive if you're going to relive one.
No. What I'm saying is it was a great season, but we can't keep looking backwards. But my question is related to the running game. Mm-hmm. I think that with the injuries that we've suffered, we look a little bit better. But I want to talk about the running game. You know, what do you see? We did do a little bit better in the last game, but I think that our running game is going to be the key to our success going to the playoffs, and we have a new addition at center, as everybody knows. What do you see from our running game? What do you think we need to improve?
I think the offensive line has to block a little bit better. Quite frankly, I think last year you saw some improvement, especially with Bear Pascoe getting the start for Henry Anoski. I thought he did a little bit better a job blocking. I think the tight ends and Jake Ballard, who's been great catching the ball, I think he needs to do a better job blocking on the edge. He has been a little bit inconsistent. Chris Knee comes back this week. But quite frankly, I don't think he's been as good as he's been in the past this year, even when he's healthy. I think he can get better. Creed McKenzie's been solid at right tackle. David Deal's readjusting to that guard position. You hope he's going to get better as the year goes around, as he does pulling and all that stuff. And Will Beatty needs to become a little bit more physical on the left side. He's been a very good pass protector, but he's a better pass protector than he is a run blocker. So honestly, I think where you're going to want to see most of the improvement is on the offensive line, and the more this group plays together in the roles they're in now, the better they're going to get. Was the running game better last week? Yes, I agree with you, but I don't think it was consistent enough. If you don't have that 30-yard run in the fourth quarter, you're looking at a 3 yard per carry type of clip right there, and that's not going to get it done if you're the Giants.
No, that's not going to get it done. I do agree with you. I think maybe if we don't suffer any injuries, God forbid, on the line, we will get better.
Right.
Last thing. Travis Beckham.
Hell no.
I don't even know at this point why we even drafted this kid. I don't see anything. It just seems like a waste. It seems like we should have got a tight end. We're more suited to run. And we got this H-back type guy who hasn't even gotten on the field. I don't know. I just think that was a waste. What do you think?
Well, I got to be honest with you. Travis Beckham has not produced the way the Giants would have liked him to produce. A lot of that has to do with injuries. He's kind of battled little hamstring problems and other minor injuries throughout his career with the Giants. He hasn't been on the field consistently because of his health. And frankly, when he has been on the field, he hasn't been very productive. I mean, the last few weeks he's played, Eli Manning just hasn't really looked in his direction. Kevin Gilbride spoke a few weeks ago, made the point that he's still kind of learning the offensive system. And for a guy that's been here for 3 years, you should pretty much know the offensive system by now. And I think he's been a disappointment, and I appreciate the call. And I will quote Tom Coughlin when he was asked about Travis Beckham earlier in the year and, you know, why he's not playing as much as he might do. And Tom Coughlin said, Beckham is Beckham. And that's what I'll close that with. Phone calls, I got to say, folks, you guys did an excellent job today. I was a little nervous walking in here solo. Wasn't sure I'd be able to get through the show, but you guys made it easy. Much appreciated on the phones. I didn't even get to the multitude of Twitter questions that are on there. I'll make sure I hit them after the show's over, folks. Make sure you check that out. I did see, by the way, I had a nice little conversation on Twitter last week with one of our loyal listeners, my man Henry Himshoot, who actually listens to the show from South Africa. And he does not call in, but he's a loyal listener, and he listens on Twitter. So, Henry, I see your tweets, and, of course, the tweets from all the other Giant fans out there to hashtag Giants Chat. I'll get to you guys after the show when I get back into my office, and we'll talk some New York Giants football on Twitter. Everybody, great job today, Mr. Murray. Excellent job on the phones. Thank you to Sam Madison, Super Bowl champion and former Giants cornerback. Does a great job covering the Dolphins down in Miami. Everybody, thanks for joining us. Tomorrow morning, we start our look-ahead serious preview time. Giants and Dolphins, Paul Dottino, Anita Marks, Big Blue Kickoff Live, 9:30 to 10:30, right here on Giants.com. Make sure you tune in. We'll see you then.